Our gospel reading is from Mark chapter 6, beginning at verse 34.
Praise and glory to God.
When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take 8 months of a man's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to set before the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 baskets full of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. This is the gospel of Christ.
Praise to Christ the word.
May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. It wasn't that long ago that people regularly experienced food shortages. My own grandparents still experienced them, when the local farm just did not produce enough or the whole country suffered from food shortages. Today, it's often not so much that the food is short, but rather that many families experience such high costs in areas such as housing, heating, and healthcare that they have to cut expenses somewhere. And food is one area where they see that potential to cut expenses. When I studied in the USA, I got enough of a scholarship to live on, but there wasn't much left over after I paid for the essential expenses. So I too tried to make savings on the food front. One of the savings, and how I could still get a good meal now and then, was to go to events where free food was offered. And quite a few students probably would do that. There was actually quite plenty of events to get free food at. There was the regular tailgating. Now, I suppose not many of you know what tailgating involves, but ahead of an American football, college football game, there would be all these little stalls set out up around the stadium. And normally there would be food there, particular, you know, barbecue, sausages, things like that. So that was a favorite event of mine. Then there were also the university celebrations, normally at the beginning and end of the term. There were events for international students. There were welcomes and farewells for different professors. And there were also the regular church services for students, which normally had a meal attached. And sometimes I went to the occasional big event that brought together by various churches to which students were invited. So that was one way of getting a good meal on occasion. And then, of course, in those days, I also went to Israel on excavations where the food was provided. So for me, I really lived in the land of milk and honey in Israel. Well, at least in the morning and evening, because it was a kosher kitchen. So at lunch, we usually had meat, and if you've got meat, you can't have milk. No dairy food, so was land of milk and honey for me in the morning and evening. But sometimes in our plenty, we don't remember how essential food is for us. For much of human experience, having enough to eat was a constant concern for people. Having a house filled with storable food was seen as a sign of blessing in ancient Israel, and it is still considered important in many cultures today. So, for example, in the West Bank, among Palestinians, even though they can get all their food from the grocery store often, it's still a sign of blessing if your food, if your grain bin is full at the end of the year. So when we ask for today's bread in the Lord's Prayer, that's not just a metaphorical phrase to ask for spiritual sustenance. Rather, it's a prayer for food for our material needs. Now, clearly in the Bible, the food that we eat and the spiritual sustenance we rely on, those are related, and we cannot totally separate them. But it's important to see the material need when we read about God's provision in the Bible. In our readings today, we have two instances of miraculous feeding of people. In our reading from the Old Testament, the need for food is quite urgent. If the miracle had not happened, then the likely outcome for the widow and her son would have been death. In our New Testament reading, there is no indication that the people were facing a chronic food shortage. Rather, in their enthusiasm for Jesus, it seems they were not prepared by taking many provisions with them. So the food that they received then was sufficient for this one meal. Well, and we were told there was some left over. In the last 200 years or so, commentators were often pressed to explain how exactly those quite improbable stories had happened. They were asked to maybe take a more scientific approach and explain it somehow. But I don't think that's a very profitable question. It certainly goes against the intention of the sources. So it is quite clear that the writers intended to show that what God did something impossible. Mark, for example, the writer of the Gospel, is not interested in analyzing exactly how Jesus achieved the impossible. Rather, Mark shows that Jesus is uniquely the Son of God by highlighting Jesus' actions that only God could do or God had the right to do. Now, in ancient times, about 200 years after Jesus, there were some writings that portrayed Jesus as doing some miracles just because he could. Those writings were quite fanciful and judged to be untrue and heretical by the church. For example, there's the infancy gospel of Thomas. And in that gospel, there's the narrative of Jesus making some clay birds and then making them come to life and they fly away and everybody's amazed. That writing also describes the young Jesus inadvertently cursing another boy who immediately dies. So this writing is filled with fanciful, sometimes malevolent, supernatural actions of the young Jesus as he slowly learns to use his powers for the good. If you're into movies, particularly youth movies, there are still lots of those around of the hero learning to control his magical actions. Well, the Gospels are quite different. Because Jesus, yes, Jesus does the impossible, but Jesus always does so for a purpose, and always in subtle yet amazing ways. God's presence breaks into the world with love in many small yet incomprehensible ways. So in our reading today, a characteristic of God that Jesus embodied was the nourishment of the hungry. God provides for our physical needs as well as our spiritual need. God gives our daily bread. And just as Jesus did not eliminate all diseases and sickness from the world when he went around healing, Jesus did not do away with all hunger forever. Rather, the healings and the provisions of food are signs of God's kingdom breaking into the world, signs of God's goodness that changes people's lives. The story in the Gospel of Mark Immediately before this feeding of the 5,000 is the beheading of John the Baptist on the order of King Herod Antipas. We read that story a few weeks ago. In that story, a sumptuous banquet with dancing was held. And this sumptuous banquet contrasts with this meal by the lake. There in the palace, delicacies of every kind were served in excess. There on the shore of the lake, people ate simple bread and fish. The people on the lakeside were satisfied. The people in the palace resorted to intrigue and murder. God's provision is not about excess, power, place, and getting even with others. It is about being satisfied. Maybe the book of Proverbs in the Old Testament already conveyed some of that sense when it says, "Better a meal of vegetables where there is love than a fattened calf with hatred." Now, in those days, vegetables were considered the very ordinary meal of the poor, while a fattened calf was considered the delicacy of the wealthy. Nowadays, of course, we know that well-prepared vegetables can be more delicious and nutritious than a choice side of meat. But I think the idea is clear. The life of God is not where there is excessive consumption, but rather where love is, where we have found the bread of life, where we are satisfied. The Bible is similarly clear that the fullness of God's kingdom will be peace and wholeness and God's presence and glory, but it will not be the unsatisfying pursuit of evermore. For example, the prophet Micah talks about the time of peace. The law will go out from Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. Everyone will sit under their own vine and under their own fig tree, and no one will make them afraid, for the Lord Almighty has spoken. Well, one vine and one fig tree is not much. But the picture here is one of being content and satisfied, at peace with God and the world, because our lives are orientated towards God. So I think that the meal there on the shore of Lake Galilee also pointed forward to the heavenly banquet when God's people will be at peace with their God, when all their longings and hunger will be satisfied. The Gospels of Matthew and Luke record Jesus quite often speaking about the fulfillment of God's kingdom being like a banquet. It's not quite so frequent in the Gospel of Mark, but there are allusions to this theme here in the feeding of the 5,000, also when Jesus spoke to the Syrophoenician woman, and of course at the Last Supper. The banquet provides the idea of the joy, the satisfaction, the community and the peace that the coming of God's kingdom brings. And so maybe as we come together to also share a meal and provide hospitality, we can also foreshadow the coming of God's kingdom. We do that, of course, in the very formalized setting of the Eucharist, in which we connect the sacrifice of Jesus and the salvation through the cross with the promise of God's fulfillment and the coming in glory. But maybe we do that also when we come together at other occasions, even when we share a cup of morning tea or a meal as we build community. We do that when we offer hospitality to others and invite them into that love of God. And we do that when we help those who do not have enough. I think as we share hospitality, our food does not necessarily have to be that basic as it was on the shore of that lake, where there was only bread and fish. What is important is that the food is provided and served and eaten in love. It is important that it is eaten in gratitude and in anticipation of that meal when we will be forever with our God. So maybe when we sit down for a meal and when we even say grace, we can eat it looking forward to the banquet when all our hunger will be stilled, when we will be satisfied and at peace. And I hope that this will also inspire us to care for those who do not have enough, and certainly to invite others into the joy, gratitude, and satisfaction that Jesus offers.